A podcast will begin in just a moment. InvestTalk distribution made possible by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. Ultra-conservative investments make money 100% of the time and never lose. At the other extreme, some Far East funds, for example, lose money as much as 60% of the time and make money only 40% of the time. So what level of risk are you up for? Try our award-winning risk analysis tool and discover something about yourself. It puts a number to your risk tolerance. From there, if you want, the professionals at KPP Financial can tell you if your current retirement plan is a good match. Just go to InvestTalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab. And now, today's InvestTalk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Wednesday edition of InvestTalk. It is July 27, 2016. And of course, we're here for the average investor to help you get above average results. That's our goal. Now, are you ready to get old, or in my case, older? Are you ready? Are you ready for it? Thanks to modern medicine and overall better quality of life, people are living longer. In the U.S., I think the average is about 81, and for men, it's about 76 years old. Now, in the 1950s, I think the average was around 68 or so. 68. So we're all living a lot longer. That's about let's just give it about a decade longer. A little bit more or less, depending on, you know, if you're a male or female. So, and I never, ever hear anybody coming to me and say, you know, I should have started early saving for retirement. It's always the opposite. They always start late. We regret. They have regrets that I started later. And they need to catch up. So, it's a very delicate balance. To save for your nest egg. How much do you save? How much do you put away? And try to enjoy life at the same time. I understand that. Now, many financial planners, you know, can provide a snapshot of, with graphics and charts and things, a financial outlook for anybody 5, 10, 15, 20 years down the road. I could do that. And really, sometimes it takes seeing it on paper before you wake up and understand what you really are doing and how far you are behind. But it's difficult. I know it's difficult to save enough money. You're not getting pension plans that you like you used to. They don't exist, only in government jobs, basically. So you got to do it yourself with 401ks and IRAs and all those other things that you could do. It's up to you. It's in your hands. No one's going to hold your hand and make you do it. You have to decide to do it. So what are you going to do? Now, if you need help, there's a bunch of online retirement calculators that you can use to help paint a better picture. But, you know, consulting with a real person is usually better. But you still can do it yourself. You can search online. You can easily find all those online calculators. One is at, financialmentor.com calculator. You can find them, and they'll help you calculate what you need. And most people be disappointed. They're not saving enough. Anyway, do you have a question about figuring out your retirement income needs? Well, you can call. Or any money questions, you can call. Check in now on our 24-hour listen line. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number.
Hey, Steve. How's it going? This is JT over in Florida. I had a quick question for you about the P.E. ratio that you are using on the show for the S&P 500 for the entire index. You're saying that it's around 19, but when I am researching for the trailing 12 months, I'm coming up with a 25 P.E. ratio. And then for the Shiller P.E. ratio for the S&P 500, I'm getting 27, which is a little higher. I was wondering if you could please elaborate on the one that you're using. Thank you, and I love the show.
Yeah, I'm using the forward-looking P.E. ratio. I'm trying to be as optimistic as I can, and I'm still telling you the market's overvalued. You're looking backward, which is not wrong. It's just another way to look at it. And if you look at the Shiller P.E. averages, I believe, the 10-year earnings per share for all the S&P 500 averages out over the 10 years. So the 1 year or 2 years of really good or bad numbers doesn't affect it as much. And those numbers are pretty high. So I'm just trying to point out, no matter how you look at it, the market is not cheap. It's expensive. And you're just helping me point that out, is what you're doing. But I'm looking at the forward estimates, and that's why I say about 19. Because no one really knows. exactly what the estimates earnings are going to be looking forward. But since everybody does look forward, professionals, everybody in the field looks forward, they base on the P.E. ratio based on that number. And the problem we have is, even with the early seasons out, then numbers are looking, beating the expectations. Like Apple, stock were up 7%, 6-7% today. It was a really happy times because they beat expectations. But if you look back a year ago, they made less than they did a year ago, same quarter. That's not good, and that's what you're seeing. But you're seeing all this excitement about beating expectations. But, you know, that really is, okay, that's great. We're happy you beat expectations. But when the experts downgrade the expectations, what good is that? I mean, we need growing earnings, growing earnings. So my forward-looking S&P 500 P.E. ratio is about 19, where if you look back, it'd be in the low 20s, and the Shiller is even higher, 25. Shiller can get higher than that and go up to 30. I've seen it as high as 30. But what you should take away with this, from this little monologue of mine, is that the market is a bit overpriced. Is it dramatically overpriced? Not necessarily, but it certainly is overpriced. Okay? Okay, let's also try to answer one of our questions via our text message, which seems to be pretty popular. Steve, thanks for a very informative show. I bought HSBC back in December at $40 a share. The stock is currently down 20%. I'm contemplating buying more. Is the dividend safe? Do you see this company as a good buy? I know it's risky, but see it is as good turnaround company. But I see it as a good turnaround company with a high dividend payment. HSBC, Hong Kong Shanghai Bank. That's what that stands for. And I believe they're out of England. HSBC. Come on. United Kingdom, yes. HSBC is out of the United Kingdom. Come on, I need a chart now. Where's my charts? Great. So that's just great. Chart's gone, but I'll bring them back up. I'll find them. Let's take a look at the dividend. Dividend is 7.08%. I don't know if that's maintainable. That's pretty high. Whenever you see that, everybody, you know, you need to say, oh, wait a minute. That seems high. How is that supportable? How can they pay that much money? I'm not saying that the companies cannot pay it. What I'm saying is, it's pretty difficult for them to be able to maintain that high of a dividend. So is it a great investment? Is it a good investment? Is it cheap? The P.E. ratio is 11. Remember, I have been recommending for quite some time not to buy big banks. But does that mean you never buy them? No. So now for over a year, the big banks have been falling. So has HSBC. It's been falling for well over a year. So is it now time to get into it? Do you buy it now? And is it cheap enough for you to make it worth your while? Well, their earnings are going to be $3 and a penny this year. That's 30 cents less than the last year. Next year, it's going to go up to $3.03. It's a $32 stock. So it's right around 10-11 PE. The five-year average is 8-15. So it's not really, really cheap. It is not expensive either. And it looks like it has put a bottom right around, you know, it looks like a bottom has been reached around $19, $20 a share. And it's now tested it three times. So it could very well be a buy point at this stage. It very, very well could be a buy point. I'm looking at different numbers. They actually don't have a lot of debt for being a bank. I mean, the banks usually have lots of debt. So this could be a good area to buy this stock in. But it does look like it's near the top of its range. It's about, for ever since the beginning of the year, $33 down to $19, $20, back to $33, back to $19, $20. So it's been in that range. Until it breaks out of that range, I think you wait for it to break out, or you wait to go retest back down to $20 a share, and then start to bounce again, then buy it. I don't know if you buy it here because it's just near the top of the range at 32.71. Can it maintain 7.8%? I'm going to say that's going to be very, very difficult for them. Very difficult. Let's go to Mark in Los Cabos. How you doing, Mark?
It's Mac, Steve Mac.
Hi, Mac. How you doing?
Very good. I was calling about FCX.
Okay. Freeport Mac Moran?
Right. I bought it and at $12, mm-hmm. and it went way down. And excuse me, I called you, and it started coming back up. And you said you didn't see why I couldn't hit about $14, and it's there almost. Mm-hmm. And I was looking at the fundamentals, and I'm trying to think really if I wanted to own this thing anymore. What do you think of it?
Well, they're going to make 56 cents a year this year, 56 cents a share, 55, 56. And, last year they had 21 cents. Next year they're going to make $1.11. That makes this a 12 PE ratio on this company. Their sales have been suffering, and if it's Freeport Mac Moran, everybody engaged in exploration development of silver, copper, silver, gold, molybdenum, and other precious metals. And it's big. It's a $16 billion company. It's not small. So it's right there now at resistance, $13, $14, and $14 looks like the top. And you really, as an owner of it, Mark, you want it to break above $14, and it's hesitating. It's hesitating because that's where resistance is, meaning that's where people tend to sell it, because once it gets there, the people say, I got even, I'm getting out, are getting out, right?
Yes, sir.
If it was me, I probably hold on to it. I'm still holding on to my precious metals. I'd like to hold on to them until we see a market correct, and then I might start cutting back, because I think the dollar will go down and these kind of stocks will continue to go up. But you're right, it's now at where it should be and where we thought it might go, and now it's there, so now do you take some money off the table? And that's I think it's going to break above it, but you know what, how far? It's a tough call, Mark. Sorry, I can't give much of a better answer.
the fundamentals I was looking at showed them losing a lot of money. I guess I have the wrong numbers.
Yeah, they'll make a lot of money next year. Yeah, they'll make a lot of money this year and next year. They're growing their money now. Good luck, Mark. Mike, told you. Sorry, Matt. Good luck. It's time to measure your risk tolerance. Only when we understand our comfort level of risk can we determine how to invest. So how much risk do you like to take? How much do you want to take? And how do you really know what that number is? Well, you can use our free net risk analysis tool on investtalk.com. It helps. It helps a lot. It's free and it takes about 3 minutes. Then if you want to, you can go to the next level and we can help you determine what the risk of your portfolio is. That's what's up to you. And remember, it's all there right there on investtalk.com. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. What's on your mind? What do you want to talk about? There's lots to talk about. What is on your mind, though? Let's talk about, and I didn't really go over what we were going to discuss, 5 things you should know about the SEP IRA. There's a difference between an IRA and a SEP IRA. Distinct difference. And that's going to be one of our main talking points today. And the market, I also want to talk about watch out for low volatility stocks. People talk about low volatility ETFs. Low volatility ETFs, not stocks. I want to warn you about them a little bit. And the Fed said they were going to maybe consider raising the rates in September. Well, why did the market react by saying reducing the odds that was going to happen? And why oil may fall to about $35-ish per barrel, $35. Why that's going to happen? Those are the things we're going to talk about. The market was mixed today, Dow down 2. NASDAQ up 30 because of Apple and some tech stock, and the S&P down 3. So we kind of need to put some of the talk in Invest Talk, so give me a call, 888-99-CHART. Chart. 888-992-4278. Let's talk to Fahim in San Jose. How you doing, Fahim?
I'm good. Thank you, Steve, for taking the call. Excited that this is my first call I'm making it. I've been listening to your show for a couple of months now.
Well, thank you.
My question was on the inverse ETF,
yes.
SH, Sugar Honey. That's an inverse ETF on the S&P 500. Do you recommend that for taking a bearish position on the S&P?
A bearish position, yes. Matter of fact, we own that in our stock manager account, SH, which is the ProShares mm-hmm. Short S&P 500. We own that as
I was looking.
Well, go ahead.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
I was looking at that over the period of an year, and it seems to have significant tracking error over if I look at the period of 1 year, but not so much on like 1 to 3 months.
Yeah, the tracking errors don't really. That's why I tell people that when you use leverage indexes or leverage funds, ETFs, that they're trading vehicles. They track fine for a short period of time, and then they start to lose cohesiveness to the underlying index. So you use them as a short-term trading vehicles or a short-term hedge, versus if you're going to use it like the SH, which is not a leveraged ETF. That works much better on a longer-term basis if you feel the market's going to go down on a long term. We're using it as a hedge, but I don't like the double and triple leverage funds because of their
Absolutely.
Tracking errors. So right. I like SH as a hedge. It's we've had hedges on all year long, and that's really helped us greatly when the market decides to turn ugly. Helped us great in January, and it hasn't hurt us in our performance. And I like it when we go down, the market goes down, and our five or six hedges we have go up. It makes me feel better that I'm not going down with the market, but it's a good hedge.
Thank you. Can you explain why that had a reverse split in June, and how come that didn't reflect in the price of the ETF?
Let's see.
That's my last question.
I don't see. You said it had a reverse split?
That's what I saw when I was looking at Yahoo Finance.
Huh. I'm looking at my software. I don't see a reverse split. Huh. And you said it happened in June?
June 24th.
Huh. It's not showing up on my software anywhere. I don't remember seeing the split, and I kind of watched this pretty carefully. I'm having trouble.
I may have confused it then.
Yeah, I don't think
they
split.
I'll have to check back in.
Yeah, I don't think they split. I really don't. I'll take a closer look at the break and see. But I don't think they did. Okay?
Thank you so much.
Appreciate the call. I'm going to, for everybody else, I'm going to, wait a minute, there it is. They did. 1 for 2. Yeah. They looks like 1 for 2 in June. 1 for 2. Yeah, they did have a reverse split trying to prove the price up. Should have affected the price. Didn't really pay too much attention to it, apparently. But reverse split, everybody, versus a regular split, that means they're taking some of the shares, they're trying to bump the price up, trying to get the price up. And the problem is once they do it, they reverse split the spot, all of the price of the stock going back forever. So when I'm looking at a chart, it just reflects the split, and I don't see it. So I had to punch in another piece of software to see the split. And I do see it there. So he's correct. Fahim, you're entirely correct. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. What to watch out for, there's a number of things that we all have to be careful of, okay? We all know that. And one of them is the things to watch out for, low volatility of ETFs. Another one is what you should know about a SEP IRA. I guess we'll go with a SEP IRA versus regular IRA. What is a SEP IRA? It acts very similar to an IRA, and it's designed for self-employed people with very few employees or no employees. And you could put a lot more money away in a SEP IRA than a regular IRA. You could put up to like $53,000 away per year, and that's in 2016, or 25% of the employee's compensation up to $265,000, quite a bit. Now, this is the trick. If you put money, if you're self-employed and you put money in it for you, and you have a SEP IRA and you have employees, you have to put the same amount of money in for the employees. Percentage-wise. So in the case of self-employed individuals, if you're just you can put up 25% of your income up to $53,000. And that's, of course, a lot more than the $5,500 maximum on a regular IRA or There's certain things you got to be careful of. Another nice thing about a SEP IRA, of course, you can wait till the following year and extension of tax returns. If you didn't want to file your tax return immediately, you could extend it to like August, and you can still go way back the year before and contribute to the SEP IRA. So SEP IRAs are good. Once you get to about 6 to 10 employees, boy, that's kind of tough because, you know, you're the ones putting in the money for the employees. Okay, so you got to be careful as an owner of putting money into the SEP IRA. You got to talk to your accountant about these things. Bring your questions. I want to hear them. Share your investing story. I want to hear them too. We're here for you. I want to hear what's going on with your life. 888-99-CHART is how you can get through. You can do it right now.
Got a question for Steve or Justin?
I'm wondering what out there is going to work better over the next 20 years than buy and hold.
You're the best person to ask it at 888-99-CHART. We thank you for subscribing to our podcast. KPP Financial has served clients all across the U.S. for more than 20 years, from all walks of life, lifestyles, and resources. KPP programs are designed to serve a specific need or criteria, and at your leisure, you can explore each of them on investtalk.com, like the Select Growth and Income Program, handpicked mutual funds for flexibility, strength, and diversity. Learn more about it on InvestTalk. When you're ready, just click on the Investments tab. End of commercial, and now let's get back to InvestTalk. Let's get back to InvestTalk, made possible every day by KPP Financial. Have a question for financial advisor Steve Peasley? 888-99-CHART is how to reach him right now.
888-992-4278. Sahish, how you doing? This is Steve.
Hey, Steve. I'm good. How are you?
Good. Thanks for the call.
Steve, I have a question on one of the stock. The symbol is UWTI.
Yes. What's your question?
It's a crude oil one. So I just wanted to see, is there any uptrend in the near future? I mean, I see every day it's going down and down and down.
Okay, this is, he's looking at UWTI, which is 300
3X long.
What?
Sorry. 3X long, yes.
Yeah, UWTI is 3 times a long crude price. So it's an ETF seeking to provide long exposure to 3 times the daily performance of the S&P crude oil index. Okay? So, you expect it if crude oil, well, you got to take a look at the index. You want to see what's in it. But this is a 300% leverage. So we were just talking about tracking errors. You're going to have a lot of tracking errors with this because it's trying to do a 300% down or up in relationship to the index it's tracking. And you can see that it's not quite working, because you could see where it went down, and then it started coming up. And if you looked at the underlying index, it moved up along with this one when it bottomed in January, February. But the index, this should have moved up 3 times the index, and it didn't quite make more than about 2.5 times the index, if you take a look at it. So that's what I mean by tracking error. It tries, but they all try, but they have trouble keeping to that error, keeping to the index they track like they're supposed to, especially when they're leveraged. Usually an unleveraged fund can do it pretty easily. They can just buy the underlying index and they follow it. It just tracks it. Now, your question is this about, is it given up? It went to about $39 or so, and now it's back down to $19. And is it done giving up the gains, and will it finally move up? And I'm going to say, I don't think so. I think oil is under a lot of pressure right now, and dollar has moved up, which helped it a lot from the January lows. And I think the dollar might be peaking. And I think if that's true, short-term peak anyways, then oil prices are going to fall. And this index will probably still have a ways to go on the downside, Sahish. I think you got a little ways to go on the downside. So this would be a bit risky to hold on to, in my opinion. Okay?
So do you think if it goes down like 15, 16, it's a good time to enter and average it?
If it holds there, yes, you got to wait till it holds. And I you want to see if it's going to break that low it made in January. And if it does, you don't want to be buying more. You certainly don't want to do that. You want to see it hold and start back up and then buy. Buy it when it starts moving up. And that's where you really want that. You have a much higher probability of having a successful trade when you do that. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it, Sahish. All right. UWTI, everybody. UWTI. Watch out for low volatility ETFs. That's one of the talking points I want to discuss, because there's been a ton of money pouring into these things, about $50 billion in the last few years, $10 billion a year. That's a lot. And if you looked at them, they actually are more volatile than the holdings that they have, the underlying index that they're tracking. And one of the reasons, and to be honest though, when I say more volatile, they've done better than the index they're tracking, you know, the low volatility index that they're tracking. And that's because of all that money being pouring in. So when it goes up, they're going up higher. When it goes down, they're going down a little lower, because money's being put into them, a lot of money. So I am worried about them. I start out saying watch out for them, because that trend could easily reverse over the next 5 years. Okay, so it's not a one-way street. I want you to be aware of why things work and why they don't. And this goes right along with the conversation of leverage ETFs. Why is the low volatility ETF working better in the last 5 years than it would in another time period? And that's because more and more money is being poured into it. The main reason anyways. So as more and more money pours in, when it starts to fall, people will be attracted to it. Low volatility because they think it won't go down with the market, and it's a safer bet than buying the index. Well, it has been in recent times because of that money. But what happens when money stops pouring in? What happens when the money starts pouring out? So just be aware of it. Don't always think it's always going to work. This is one of the problems I have with a lot of listeners, is that they think that because something has worked, it will work forever. No, it works until it stops working. I can't tell you when it stops working. They also, on the downside, they think that something's going to fall forever. No, it won't. You just have to have your eyes open to understand that it works both ways, and you want to ride the ride as long as you can. You ride the ride as long as you can, but try to be aware of when that ride may stop and why it may stop. So just watch out. They've been working too good lately, the low volatility ETFs. Lately meaning the last few years. 888-99-CHART. Let's take a test question from Sachin, one of the podcast listeners. Hi, Steve. I have been listening to your show for a while. Great show. Learning a lot. I want your opinion on SNY, Sanofi Avantis. I picked some up as a core holding. Is good for a long-term hold? And that's a question mark to that. SN is a Nancy Y, everybody. SNY. So I'll type this in to my software. And it is a French developer of pharmaceutical products and vaccines targeting various therapeutics. It is a $109 billion company, so you would consider it a core holding, a big blue chip company, pays 2.6% dividend, has a pretty steady income. They peaked in 2014 in the last 5 years at $3.38 a share. Then 311, then 316, and next year 307. So it's peaked and now it's going sideways. Sales have been slowly falling, 1 to 5, 6, 7% per quarter. So that's a problem. PE is 13. It's a $42 stock selling for $307. So this is the kind of stock you want to buy when it's on sale. It's that simple. If you can find it on sale, that's when you want to buy it. And that means you want it to go down and pick it up cheap. Now, the question is, it got down to about $37, $38 in this year. Right now, it's at $42. So you can see it's not very volatile. So it's a good, solid core holding. And it's right now near a peak. It has been trading in a range for all year. It's at that peak now. I think, you know, I think you could pick it up here. It's above all those moving averages. But it might pull back on you. Might just pull back on you. And if it does, it's going to go to $37, $38 again. And you can buy some more because it is a big blue chip type company and one to own for to be a core holding. I agree with that. Okay? I can help you organize your retirement portfolio, maybe give you some ideas, help you estimate your retirement income needs like we talked about earlier. Each month, I set aside at least 2 days to meet with our listeners. If you live in Northern California, I will be in San Jose August 3rd and 4th. 2 days in a row. We've added another day on purpose because we've had a lot of demand. So to schedule your time, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab and then Portfolio Review.
When you're an InvestTalk insider, you have instant access to special watch lists. These lists are created to give investors an idea of the type of investments the pros consider when exploring a certain asset class, for example. And there's an entire library of wealth webinars that you can play anytime. That is, if you join up to be an InvestTalk insider. It's free. Just go to investtalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab.
Hi, Steve and Justin. I got a question for you pertaining to insurance, life insurance. First of all, I'd like to thank you for your podcast. Really enjoy listening to it. My name is Dan, and I'm from New York. My age is 57, and my wife is 56. We're both in good health. Our home is paid off. Our rental income property is paid off. When I die, my pension dies with me. But due to the value of my portfolio, my wife's lifestyle will not change. What I'm currently paying on term life insurance for my wife for $250,000 is $244 a year, and for myself for $500,000 is $469 a year. I do have whole life insurance of $150,000, which I do not have to make any more payments towards due to a lawsuit that took place with the insurance company back in 1994. My question is this: do I keep my term life insurance? It's really not expensive, but am I just throwing money away by keeping it? And does term life insurance expire at age 70? I am going to look forward to listening to your answer. Thank you very much.
Well, first of all, term life insurance does not expire at a certain age. It is called term because you bought it for a certain length or term of the policy. So you could buy it for 5 years, 7 years, 10 years, 15 years. You need to know where you are in the term. How long is in the term? Does it have a couple more years left? Does it have 10 more years? Did you buy a 25-year term? So it's not like whole life or universal life, which I don't care for, as you probably know, have heard on this radio. If you're going to buy life insurance, I like term. And you would need to find out when the term expires. And is it a waste of money? Well, think about why you bought it. Why did you buy it? If your reasons for you when you bought it are still valid, then you keep it. If the reasons you bought it are no longer valid, this is how I would look at it. If they're no longer valid, I would get rid of it. For instance, let me give you four instances. If you had children and you bought the term life insurance because you wanted your wife or husband to have extra money to help raise the children, there's a good reason. Now the children are older, they're out of the house, you don't need the money anymore. Or paying off a mortgage. You said you paid off all your mortgages. What did you buy the term because you had mortgages and you didn't want your spouse to worry about them if one of you died? Well, that's not a problem anymore, so then you don't need it. So the question is, how long is the term left and do you need it? Do you need the life insurance? It sounded in a brief description you gave me that you really don't need it. So if you don't have a need for insurance, don't have it. You know, I wouldn't buy it. I wouldn't keep paying for it either. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. The Fed said that the September rate increase is on the table, right? Now, they said it in so many different words, but that's basically what they said. What was really fascinating is before they spoke, before this came out, the chances of a rate increase in September by the CME FedWatch.com tool said that 30%, the chances of a rate increase was 30%. The chances of a rate increase is 30% after the Fed released the statement, which said that they are leaving the rate increase on the table for September. They're leaning toward that rate increase in September. And then the same FedWatch, CME FedWatch, their opinion, their probability went down to 18%, from 30 down to 18%. They don't think they're going to raise at all. Now, how is that possible? Well, one of the reasons is because they don't like the fact that the durable goods report came out and it was down 4%. And they think the GDP is not going to be nearly as strong as maybe the Fed thinks it is. And people are a little bit more concerned about that than the Fed is. Usually the Fed is more optimistic than they should be. So that, I think, it had a lot to do. The expectation was for the durable goods report to be down 1.7%. Was down 4% instead, which is a very bad number. And why is that important? Durable goods is those things that last 3 years or longer. So people buy durable goods when they have confidence because they're expensive items. Cars, tractors, expensive items, washer dryers, things that cost money more than just, average. 3 years or longer, something that will last that long usually costs more money. And so if people are afraid to commit to that kind of spending, that means that maybe they're not fully committed to the economy as continuing to grow. And remember, consumer drives our economy. So it's interesting that the Fed, the day the Fed says that the interest rate is on the table for September is the day that the FedWatch tool, CME FedWatch tool, said, no, we don't think so. We think it's less likely, not more. Isn't that interesting? That's what makes this job so interesting. Things change all the time, and it's hard to figure out what the heck, what is everybody talking about? And that's why it's a lifetime of learning, everybody. It's not that simple. The future is changing all the time. And the opinion of the future is changing all the time. And the opinion can drive markets. Emotions drive markets. It's just interesting. It's very interesting. 888-99-CHART. You can ring through right now with your question. We still have time. That's 888-99-CHART. And you can call that 24 hours a day, 7 days a week also. Or you can just send me a note. Just go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve.
Coming up on Invest Talk, answers to your questions, any money matter, comparing load and no load mutual funds, how to gauge your needs in retirement, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Justin or Steve. This is Dave from Boston, a podcast listener. I was looking at a stock, ticker symbol LAZ, down 40% for the past year. It's paid a dividend since it became public, and I think the dividend's safe. I wonder if you can give me your opinion. Thank you.
I would say, yeah, that dividend's pretty secure. It's a Lazard company, LAZ. LAZ is a symbol of Lazard Limited. It's where the riskiness part of this is where they are, what they do. It's a $4.3 billion company, so it's not small, but small-ish. Provides asset management, mergers and acquisition, and restructuring services to corporations across 27 countries. So in a recession, this stock would do very poorly, probably. Okay, coming out of recession, probably do pretty well. But the stock itself is fairly inexpensive. It's a $33.41 stock, and they're going to make $33.29 next year, so that's a 10 PE. It's a 10 PE. Right now, the PE is 10 also, and it's fallen from, you know, as you pointed out, $57 in 2015 was its high, and today it's at 33. 4.5% dividend, I think that's pretty secure. Cash flow is $6.12, pretty secure. The sales will be erratic. Sales will be erratic and probably are, you know, obviously they're softening because that's one of the reasons why the stock fell. But I do believe the dividend, if you're going to buy it for the dividend, it's pretty secure at this stage. It that isn't a kind of a higher risk in of the marketplace, though. Just make sure you understand that. I would not consider this a core holding. It's not big enough and it is riskier. Okay? Let's go to Joe in Santa Cruz. How you doing, Joe?
Hey, pretty good, Steve. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
So I'm calling about gold. We had a pretty good run today. You think the same is going to be happening tomorrow?
Well, what is the question we really should ask ourselves is, what do we think about the dollar? The dollar's had a pretty nice run up, and the gold tends to go up when dollars goes down, and we had a big run up in the dollar recently. In the last, all of July, and today the dollar fell hard, okay?
Is that because they announced the interest rates would not be happening? That's kind of what it appears?
Probably, probably, because you'll note that the opinion, I don't know if you listened earlier, but their opinion of many of the market participants is even though the Fed say they're going to raise in September, the probability opinion of that, it went down by the market participants. So that means they don't believe it, and if they're not going to raise rates, that certainly is not supportive of a higher dollar, and the dollar would go down. If the dollar goes down, gold will probably go up.
So how do you follow the dollar? What index?
I like to use the UUP, which is an ETF for the it's a PowerShares dollar U.S. dollar index bullish fund. And you can, that's a very good fund to try to track what's going on with the dollar up and down.
So what is the ticker? I'm sorry.
UUP is in Peter.
UUP.
Yeah, UUP. And you can see it, that fell sharply today, and so did the dollar, and gold went up.
I see. Okay, very well.
Okay. Appreciate the call.
Sounds good. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks, Joe. Appreciate the call. Yeah, dollar influences a lot right now. The gold prices. Don't always track it. Don't log it down in stone in your mind. Different things move gold. Inflation moves gold. We have no inflation. The dollar moves gold. The dollar goes up and down. Gold moves. And fear out there in the world, in the marketplace, in the economy, fear will drive gold higher. While oil may fall, oil price may fall to the $35 barrel. Remember I've been saying that I thought it might go up to $50, $60 a barrel this year? Well, I wrote that in my annual letter back in January, and I've mentioned it on the radio here. But now I'm saying that, well, maybe it's going to have a retracement. And that's really all I see is a retracement. Well, the problem is refined products are way oversupplied right now. Gasoline, kerosene, diesel. We have way more than we need. So, of course, that's going to probably slow down the demand for oil. And the GDP, world GDP, has been ratcheted downward, the estimate. So, not supportive of higher oil prices. Our time is up. A reminder, my portfolio review dates are for August are coming up soon, August 3rd and 4th in San Jose. To save your place on my schedule, either one of those days, just go to InvestTalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab. I'm Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Justin Klein and everybody at KPP, thank you for listening today. And let's get together again on the next InvestTalk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.